The following podcast of The Bench is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right. Deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code BENCH101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com. Use promo code BENCH101.
Say my name.
ESPN 97.5.
Damn right.
KFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gao Media station. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Craig Koskin, Jermaine Every, Andrew Carlson here. We were talking Texans before the break and just going over the Jags and the game injury report, so on and so forth. We're all pretty much in agreement that the Texans are going to win this game one way or the other, correct?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay, cool. Here's the thing.
But wouldn't it be, I'm not going to be woe is Houston guy, but wouldn't it be oh so Houston to lose and finish in the sixth seed?
You know how it would probably end up going down. They would have a lead. They would get ultra conservative, playing prevent defense.
And then be put in a position where they have to turn it back on late in the game and just not able to do so.
And can't do it. Exactly. That, it would either go down like that, or the Jags would come out and stun them, storm off to like a 3-score lead, and the Texans are trying to play catch up the whole rest of the game. Come back and fall short.
That being said, if you lose to Blake Bortles, you deserve whatever outcome you get as a result of
that. Definitely.
Which they won't. They're gonna win. I just, you know, was bringing up the remote possibility.
It is a possibility, and people need to be aware that could in fact happen.
Where is the Herm Edwards sound you play to win the game? I mean, there's exactly a reason they play the game. So there's that. I hope Andrew's not looking for that sound. He doesn't need it.
It's not no.
But the seeding actually is what is interesting at this point. So if the Texans win and all the favorites win on Sunday, the Patriots, basically the Texans and the Patriots win, the Texans are the 3 seed.
Yes.
That's how things are going to work out. Should the Texans win and the Patriots lose to the Jets, which no one really sees happening, although there's a remote chance, given the way Sam Darnold is playing currently, that game is at least interesting going into the fourth quarter.
The way that Jets defense can sometimes turn it on, and I would love to I'm going to have to be looking at Saints and Texans because I got to write for Sports Map on Sunday, but I want to keep an eye on that Jets-Patriots game to see that Jamal Adams-Gronkowski potential matchup.
Yep.
It's going to be pretty exciting to watch.
But let's just go with the assumption that the Patriots, who are favored and should be, will win at home on the last day of the season to secure the 2 seed. The Texans will be the 3 seed. What's interesting is who they might play given other outcomes.
Let's hear it.
So if the Ravens win, the Ravens will be the 4 seed.
Okay.
Should the Ravens lose and the Steelers win,
mm-hmm,
the Steelers will be the 6 seed unless Colts-Titans ends in a tie. And I'm not sure who, because they would have identical records. And I think the Patriots would have the strength of victory tiebreaker because they beat the Patriots earlier in the season.
So basically, the Texans would, if they win, they could either be playing the Ravens.
No, they can't. Steelers. They can't play the Ravens. So the Ravens can only finish. And they could actually. There's actually a scenario where they can get the 2 seed. There's a scenario where they can get the 3 seed and the 4 seed. That's it.
Okay, so basically, of all the scenarios, the teams that the Texans have a chance at playing in the first round, whether they're the 3 or the 5 or 6 or whatever.
The Texans can only be the 2, the 3, or the 6.
I thought they had a chance at being the 5th seed.
I don't believe so.
Hmm.
No, they can, because if the Chargers end up what could be the wild card as the 4 seed, as the 3 seed, the Ravens could be the 4 seed, and yes, the Texans could be the 5th seed. I don't know the exact scenario that plays out that way.
You know what? I think you're right, because the Chargers or the Chiefs would have a better record than the Texans, so they would.
Regardless of who wins that division and who's the wild card.
You're right.
So either way, the most likely scenarios, because we don't want to go into all the could-be scenarios.
Right.
The most likely scenarios are that the Texans play the winner of the Colts-Titans game as the 3-6 matchup, should they win. The Texans play the Steelers, because the Ravens lose at home against Cleveland and the Steelers win their game against Cincinnati, which is almost assured from the Steelers' standpoint, but certainly murky when we consider the Ravens-Cleveland deal. If that were to happen, a home game against the Steelers is about the last thing you want if you're a Texans fan.
I think a home game against the Steelers or playing those Colts coming in.
I mean, the last thing you really want is to somehow lose and finish in the 6th seed and have to go on the road. But should they win like we expect, I would much rather play the Colts than the Steelers. The Colts are, despite the Steelers' inconsistency, the Colts are more beatable. Although, you know, again, T.Y. Hilton just caught another pass against the Texans defense, so maybe you don't want to play the Colts.
But here's the I think that Steelers team is a lot more scary, because you not only have Antonio Brown, but you also have Juju Smith-Schuster.
God, and the other thing I don't want to see, I don't want that to be a Steelers Texans matchup, honestly, because I do not want all the lazy storylines of T.J. versus J.J. Watt. I don't want it. I can't do it. I can't do it. I just physically cannot watch a game that has that happening.
You know that they're going to have cameras on both of them, cameras on the
parents
mirrors.
The whole time. Where are the parents sitting? What are the parents wearing? Exactly. How many home videos can we show throughout the course of the game? I can't do it. Yeah. I refuse. Yeah. So Texans, Patriots, do me a favor and lose. So that we can see, so the Texans can get a bye, and I don't have to see T.J. Watt versus J.J. Watt. Please.
What if the Steelers get in, the Steelers win, and then the Steelers have to play the Texans in the next round?
In an AFC semifinal, I'm okay with it at that point. I'm not doing it during Wild Card Weekend. I'm not.
I don't want to see it at all, to be honest with you. But one of the main reasons, another reason why I don't want to see it at all, is because Vance McDonald has come along as a tight end option for Ben Roethlisberger. And the last thing we need to see is him running seam routes all day long, catching passes up the middle on this Texans defense.
Wait, is the Texans defense susceptible up the middle to tight ends?
You haven't heard?
No.
Oh, my friend.
Did Rob Gronkowski catch a couple of passes in that Patriots-Texans game earlier this season? Well, he didn't catch one of them, but it's not Bill O'Brien's job to call timeout so that the refs do their job.
No, that's not his job. That's somebody else's job.
I will never understand why any NFL coach, Bill O'Brien is not the only bad game manager. From a clock perspective, he's not.
Not at all.
It's all over the NFL. I will never understand. And I first heard this idea from it may have been Nick Wright who's the person who said it, which I hate using him as a resource, but it's actually a good idea. Why teams don't go pay some MIT graduate $200,000 a year to just stand by the coach and tell him when to go for two and when to call their timeouts.
Why do they have to pay that MIT graduate when they already have people on the staff that should know these scenarios?
But it's clear the way NFL teams and coaching staffs are created that's not a priority. So you're going to create a position with someone who should be an expert in math, simple math, mind you, on how to do it properly. Or go hire a kid who's really good at Madden and just understands clock management and pay him $60,000 a year and save yourself some money.
Texans, I'm available. I'm available. You can
Jermaine
call me.
Jermaine is a Madden champion, for the record.
I'll give you my number. I haven't been playing all that well this Madden because I've been doing a lot of this and
never
a lot
mind,
of writing.
You're fired.
Hey, y'all can give me $100,000 and I'll be more than happy to be your special
advisor.
I'm
just saying, I don't understand why teams don't pay someone specifically to stand next to the coach. And maybe the answer is the coach's egos are just too big that they're not going to listen to that person. It could be that simple of an answer. But, I mean, when you're bad at game management, you're just bad at game management. Learn. And the coaches that are bad at it never seem to do anything to learn it any better.
Here's another thing that kind of, and I'm a Saints fan, Sean Payton sometimes goes willy-nilly with calling timeouts. He does not mind using them all in the first half early, or he doesn't mind using them in the third quarter early.
First and five after an offsides from your own 35, play clock's winding down. Let's go ahead and burn timeout. Let's go ahead and get out of
this. I don't like this play call timeout. That's just the way he does things. However,
I'd rather burn timeouts than go into every single halftime with all three of them in your pocket.
Right. However, the thing that cuts Sean Payton some slack and the thing that gets people on Bill O'Brien's case, one simple thing, winning. Production.
Yeah, when you go 13-3 or 12-4 every year, you can get away with stuff like that.
He won a Super Bowl and was able to fade a little while, going 7-9 three consecutive years, missing the playoffs and whatnot.
Well, because New Orleans went from the Aints to winning a Super Bowl.
Right.
So,
they went from contenders, from you know, bags over our heads to consistent contenders.
Yep.
He was able to fade that 3-4 year stretch where they had some down years, some lean years, and then was able to bounce back the last couple years and be contenders again. So that's what gives him a lot more leash and a lot more leeway when it comes to screwing up, fouling up, messing things up. Whereas, and people say, oh, he's a genius. He gambles. He does this and he does that. Bill O'Brien does some similar things, not quite the same, but similar things. He's an idiot. Get this guy out of here. Also, you have to look at the personalities of the two coaches. I think that factors in a lot. Sean Payton, very affable to the media, not very off-putting, happy-go-lucky guy. Bill O'Brien is a red ass.
I mean, yeah, that's part of it as well. But, I mean, Bill O'Brien is in the bottom three coaches as far as game management goes. Using timeouts properly, clock management. They scored too quickly against the Eagles. That's what cost them the game.
Yeah.
The defense wasn't going to stop them. They hadn't stopped them all game.
Exactly. Nick Foles looked like an all-time great. Like, he's going to get paid $20 million plus a season this next offseason because of that game right there. Well, partially because of that game right there. We'll be right back on the bench. This is ESPN 97.5 Sports Map 94.1.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1. If you want to reach myself, Craig Koshkin, I'm Jermaine Every, by the way. That's Craig Koshkin, Andrew Carlson. You can call us on the HRMP listener line. That number is 713-780-3776. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at @_Jermaine. That's JERMAINE. He's at @C_Kosh. And Andrew is at @HypedUpAndrew. Last night we had the Academy Sports and Outdoors Texas Bowl.
SEC. SEC.
My boy over here is giving me crap because
Look, I picked Vanderbilt too, for the record. I did pick
you
Vanderbilt.
You did pick Vandy. We both did for separate reasons. But when we were on the national side, you pointed out that I picked against the Big 12 in every game.
Well, it was two games at that point. You picked against TCU in the Cheez-It Bowl, and nobody really won that game. So
no, we all lost.
We all lost. Everybody lost. The entire country as sports fans lost. And then you picked against Baylor. And to be fair, I picked against Baylor as well. But again, I've kind of contended. You could hear it on our podcast, podcastarena.com/sideline. We've kind of discussed this throughout the college football season, that the misnomer about SEC defenses and Big 12 offenses is really crazy to me when I consider them to be the same type of property. Like, SEC defenses are elite, but mm-hmm. so are Big 12 offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Big 12 offense doesn't run crazy because Big 12 defenses are so bad. There are bad defenses in the Big 12. That's neither here nor there. There's also bad defenses in the SEC as well. Not a lot of them, but there are bad defenses. The elite of the elite are great. Baylor was the fifth-ranked offense, so middle of the road in the 10-team Big 12. Not sure how that works. And
that's always
they
so
put
weird.
Up 688 yards on Vanderbilt's SEC defense. Remember, the only reason I'm giving you flack on this is your reasoning for picking Vanderbilt was because they played an SEC schedule.
That wasn't the only reason.
That was your primary
that
reason.
That was one of
your
them.
Primary reason.
That was not my primary reason. That
Stop
was
it.
One of them. That
Stop
was
it.
One of them.
Play the tape back from yesterday.
That was, one
the
of
primary
them.
Reason.
That was one of them. It
either
wasn't
way,
the primary
either
reason.
Either way, my point being, like, I think last night, to some degree, Vanderbilt is a middle-of-the-road SEC team.
Bottom of the barrel.
This year, they're middle of the road.
Yeah.
They, how many teams qualify for bowls out of the SEC? Seven or eight?
Can't remember. I think it was like, I think it was eight.
It may have been eight. Eight of 14. If Vanderbilt is the worst of those teams, they're still in the middle of the SEC.
They are in the middle of the SEC. They were sixth.
So they're in the top half, the bottom part of the top half, but they're in the top half of the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And a Baylor offense, which is middle-of-the-road offense in the Big 12, put up almost 700 yards of offense against them.
Right. Now, if Baylor did this to a team like Florida or...
That's a whole different story. But we have three more SEC Big 12 matchups to look at and see what offenses do. Again, I have no problem acknowledging the quality of defense in the Big 12 is not anywhere near that of the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the SEC myth is that their defenses are so good, they can stop anybody, including Big 12 offenses, which is, to this point in bowl season, completely false. Everyone wants to point to Mississippi State, who is one of the best defenses in the country.
Mm-hmm.
If they had a semblance of an offense, they could have contended in the SEC West this year, but they were terrible on offense. Everyone points to that opening week game where they went to Kansas State, who finished 9th or 10th in the Big 12.
They were like 2-10.
They were
like
awful.
That, right?
They
were
They caused awful. Bill Snyder to finally retire. And so they point to that game when Kansas State is about the worst representation of Big 12 offense in the entire league. So we've got three more matchups. Oklahoma State and Missouri will be playing. Texas and Georgia will be playing. And Alabama and Oklahoma will be playing. Tell me, do you think Oklahoma will be able to score between 35 and 45 points on Alabama's defense?
I'm picking Oklahoma.
I know you are. I'm just saying, as far as Big 12 offense versus SEC defense.
Yeah. Now, see, the matchups like OU and Bama, those are the matchups I want to see. Last night, Vandy and Baylor.
I get that, but we're talking
I watched about, some so, of that game. I did watch some of that game.
I get that, but my contention with the SEC versus every other conference, not just the Big 12, the argument has always been, other than Alabama and one other elite team at different times throughout the last decade and a half of the SEC, whether it be LSU or Florida during their run or Georgia currently, other than those two teams, they match up the same with every other conference. The SEC does. They're the same thing. Other than those two teams will always be elite because those two teams, Alabama and whoever else, are putting NFL talent out to a degree that no other team can compete with.
There's also the fact that there was a good 7-year straight stretch that
where they won a BCS championship.
Yeah.
And I can debunk most of those, why they shouldn't have won those titles, where the wrong team went. But that's a different story for a different day. The whole point I'm making is the SEC, other than the two elite teams, every other conference only has one elite team. The Big Ten has Ohio State. The Big 12 right now has Oklahoma, as much as it pains me to say it. The Pac-12 has nobody. And right. The ACC has Clemson.
Yeah.
And then it's a bunch of average to below average football.
Yeah.
It's the same in the SEC, except they have two. Right now it's Alabama and Georgia. Who else in the SEC is elite? Not an elite unit like Mississippi State's defense, an elite team. There's not one. LSU has holes. Haven't had a quarterback in what seems like 20 years.
They had one for a brief flash in the pan, Zach Mettenberger, when he had Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, and that was about it.
But legitimately,
that was it.
How long is an LSU, you're an LSU fan, how long have you been looking for a great quarterback to be the one missing piece between y'all and a national championship?
Probably about as long as I've been alive.
Exactly. So
In the one time that we did have an elite quarterback, it was an elite college quarterback who was one of the biggest NFL busts of all time.
Texas A&M finishes second in the SEC West this year after their game against LSU, after that win.
After they got robbed.
I would agree with you. But what is Texas A&M's best game of the season? I would contend their best game of the season is a 2-point loss to Clemson. I would contend that's their best game of the season. So you might say the LSU win because they hadn't beat LSU since coming to the SEC, and LSU owns a large head-to-head
winning record. I would say those two games right there are like 1A, 1B. And it just depends on which side of the argument you fall. So, I do like the 2-point loss to Clemson because – Clemson at the time was coming in. They were coming off a national championship game appearance in like 3 straight years.
They were still playing two quarterbacks as well.
Right, they were still playing two quarterbacks. But at the same time, that Clemson, they had Clemson.
They did.
They had them.
They're walking into the end zone for the game-winning touchdown. Yeah. It gets punched out from behind through the end zone. And for what most believe is a terrible rule, Clemson gets the ball at the 20.
It is what it is, man. That rule is so... And especially on some of these plays where, like, guys are trying to dive for the pylon and whatnot, the ball comes out, fumbles it, boom, it's ruled.
The problem is, I can agree that the rule is bad. I just don't know how to fix it because you can't just give them the ball back where they fumbled it because there has to be some punishment for the bad play and fumbling the football.
Exactly.
Part of the problem is the defense has no chance at recovering it, just like the offense doesn't for it going out of bounds. So I don't know what the answer is.
My answer to that rule, and I came up with this, we were at the barbershop one time talking about it, and everybody was going back and forth, and they asked, what do you think? I said, I think if that happens, it's almost like offsetting penalties, and you replay the down.
I think that's probably fair. That's the best way to go about it. Or if you want to flip it, because it's through the end zone, the offense gets the ball back at the 20.
Ooh.
Instead of the defense getting to recover and take over, offense gets the ball back at the 20 instead. Offense gets to keep the ball, but you got to do a little more work.
That's a good one.
I don't know.
Well, okay, how about we put it at the 50? Because the 20 seems a little extreme because you're right there.
But you don't do the 50 either. Like you have to give them their field position.
I put it to you like this. If that play took place, if the ball was hiked inside of the red zone, then we go to the 50. If that play was run outside of the red zone, then we go back to the opposite 20.
Either way, I mean, like,
something like that.
Like, we can fix the rule. You just have to have a good fix for it.
We got Chuck on the line. Chuck wants to discuss Big 12 and SEC teams. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man, but my ears are bleeding talking about this SEC myth that's just so totally false. Let me break this down for you. The SEC will pretty much out-athlete any other conference because they get the best athletes.
As we saw last night.
But if you take a Big 12 team, or let's say you put two Big 12 teams in the SEC West, and they have to face that offense, and they see it more and more, we're going to out-athlete you. You're not going to score 50 points on a regular basis.
So let's ask you a question on this, Chuck. If Oklahoma, the best team in the Big 12, clearly, right? I mean, we can agree on that, correct?
Absolutely.
If Oklahoma played in the SEC West, you don't think, at worst, they'd finish second in the SEC. Like, we can contend that Bama's better. I've said that. They're the elite team in the country. That's clear. I'm not trying to debate Bama's greatness. You don't think Oklahoma finishes second in the SEC West?
If you put Oklahoma in the SEC West, let's say for the first year when no one's used to them, sure, they might finish second. But if they're in the SEC West consistently, they're third or fourth, man.
Oklahoma is better year in and year out than Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, Arkansas is terrible. We can all agree on that. Every SEC West team, both Mississippi schools, you're just wrong on this as far as Oklahoma.
Okay,
now, if we talk about other schools as far as where they would finish,
right,
that's fair.
Let me stop you right there. They are better than Ole Miss and Arkansas. But the athletes at Auburn, Mississippi State on defense, LSU, Texas A&M, and Alabama.
Stop it. Come Stop on, it. Man. You're making a fool of yourself. You just said Texas A&M could not win a Big 12 title since 1998, immediately came into the SEC, and had a Heisman-winning quarterback. Stop it. Oklahoma.
That was 1 year. No. Just 2 years of Johnny Manziel.
Oklahoma is better than every team in the SEC West, not named Bama. Again, not named Bama. We can agree that Bama is super elite. Incredibly elite.
Look at the list of defensive coordinators just in the SEC West. That alone separates itself. But if they had to look at that offense, that spread Oklahoma offense on a consistent basis, you don't think that the defensive coordinators and the athletes in the SEC would adjust to that? There's no way, man.
Because the offensive minds in the Big 12 who are just as elite on offense as the SEC defenses are elite will make adjustments to those adjustments.
Okay, I can tell you right now, you can do a cover one robber with a spy, and that pretty much stops Kyler Murray right there.
We'll see on Saturday, right? We'll see on Saturday exactly what's on. Because Alabama's defense is elite. Alabama's defense is elite. They're very good.
If you want to. But SEC West is superior, period.
It's the best division in college football. I'm not denying that. It certainly is. It's the most competitive division in college football, without a doubt. There's no question. Oklahoma, it would still be the second best team in the SEC West if they played in it.
All right, good. Thank you for the call, Chuck. Here's where I agree with Chuck, because... And it kind of goes both ways. It goes to his point and against his point. If those SEC West defenses see that Oklahoma offense often enough, familiarity will catch up with them.
Familiarity is a powerful thing.
But to your point, to support your point, if Oklahoma is in the SEC West and recruits, and they're starting to recruit some of the same area, some of those athletes are going to say, hey, you know what? I may not want to go to Bama or LSU and sit behind some of these guys. I may want to go to OU and kind of play under this system because I like what they're doing. I like what they're building. I don't want to go to this team or this school. It could go both ways. Very interested, heated discussion here, as it always gets when Craig and I start talking about college football, specifically the Big 12 and SEC. We'll jump back into some of that and more on the other side of the break here on the Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
We're back on The Bench, a.k.a. The War Zone.
We do appreciate the call, Chuck. Thank you for calling in.
Love it.
I never mind the argument back and forth. And yeah. I do appreciate the passion for which the SEC fan represents their conference. Although it's silly when you have like Auburn fans rooting for Alabama because of SEC pride or something. If you are an Auburn fan, you should never under any circumstance root for Alabama. If you're an LSU fan, you should never under any circumstance root for Florida or Alabama. If you're... I don't know who Texas A&M's rival is. A Texas A&M fans should never root for LSU.
Exactly. Jermaine Avery and Craig Koshkin here on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1. I as an LSU fan, I hate it when Bama wins another championship. But I never root for them to win.
You just don't root for them to lose.
Yeah. And last year, I really wanted Georgia to win. And when they were up, I was just like, oh, my gosh, Georgia is actually going to do it. Georgia's actually going to do it. And then there was a miscommunication because I was talking about this with Stanford Rout, and he says it looks like they were in quarters coverage, but that corner on that side for played cover two.
And let him go.
That's why he was so open. And we dissected that play like...
Texas lost to Oklahoma last year on a very similar play where the safety thought they were in cover three and the corner thought they were in cover two, let the guy go. The safety had already rotated to the middle of the field. So
I've talked about this with a few guys that actually know the game of football intimately, know coverages, defenses, route combinations, so on and so forth. And we'll go back and forth for hours about dissecting different plays and whatnot. That's why a lot of the times, depending on what the over and under is in a lot of college games, bet the over, because every so often there's a busted coverage, somebody doesn't block somebody the right way, or something happens.
Unless it's the Cheez-It Bowl. Don't ever.
Dear God. Bro.
That was the lowest over I've seen in college all year.
And 38 and a half.
And they didn't sniff it.
They didn't even get to half of that.
No, they didn't. They were 21 points shy of it.
Yes.
22 points shy of the over, actually.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was awful.
Ridiculous.
I mean, that was truly horrendous. And granted, TCU was on their fourth string quarterback, and Cal was playing, I believe, their second and third string quarterback. So, but yeah, still, it was just bad football.
But we're going to see some bowl games. Like tonight, we got, today, actually, the Auburn-Purdue game, which is the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl.
That one's going to be interesting to me because on paper, Auburn's a 3 or 4 touchdown winner to me. I mean, I think the spread's probably 12 or 13, but that Auburn offense hasn't looked as good as you would expect it to look all year.
Right.
And even though they've had 3 weeks to prepare for him, Rondale Moore is the best freshman in the country for Purdue.
I would have to agree with you on that.
At least the best freshman wide receiver. I don't know about, we can go position for position. He is amazing. And if he just has one of those games like he had against Ohio State, there's no stopping him.
They get him in space, and they know how to get him the ball in different places, kick returns, punt returns.
And he is just dangerous.
Running the ball out of the backfield, swing passes, screen passes. I mean, just vertical routes, all kinds of stuff. But where I think that Purdue could take advantage of Auburn is Auburn runs, not exactly, but a similar style to what Ohio State ran, and we all saw what Purdue was able to do to Ohio State in that game.
Yeah, the difference being Auburn is still a run-first spread team.
Right.
And Ohio State at times wants to be a run-first spread team, but they see they've got Dwayne Haskins taking snaps, and they just want to chuck the ball all over the field.
Line on this game is Auburn's giving 3 points.
That's shocking to me. I figured that had to be a double-digit spread.
Nope. Auburn's giving 3. And I think the reason why, Purdue's 7-5 against the spread. Auburn's 5-7 against the spread this year. Auburn hasn't looked as good on offense, and Purdue has looked better than average on defense. So when you converge the two.
Yeah, I guess that's probably correct. Doing your little mathematical formula, who you got in this one? I'm very curious who you would take, especially with the lower spread. I would be inclined to go Auburn in that one, but again, I'm the worst sports gambler known to man. So if I'm inclined to go Auburn, y'all should all take Purdue max units. Or am I Jedi mind tricking y'all into doing what I really want y'all to do?
It's legit. It's right at the spread. When I do my little math, it's right at Auburn, right at 3, 2.5, 3. So if you can get, if you get 2.5, I would say maybe take the other side. I'm not sure, but this game is so close, it's kind of hard to tell.
It's a no bet, basically, is what you're saying.
Right, because it's one of those games where when I'm looking at everything, I'm looking at the defenses, I'm looking at the offenses.
What's the total in this one?
Take a wild guess.
52.5.
57.5.
That wasn't terrible. That wasn't way off.
Weren't that far off. If Rondale Moore gets going in this game and Jarrett Stidham can't get himself going in this game, Purdue's going to end up winning.
Oh, I completely agree with.
And it's the exact opposite on the other side. If Auburn can find a way to ball up Rondale Moore and kind of contain Purdue's run game, Auburn's going to win this game. It's one of those games where the ball could bounce either way, and you don't really know how it's going to go.
You won't know till about midway through the second quarter how the flow of the game's going. And then maybe you can bet the second half lines as they come up. But it's just, you got to get a feel for the game first. And you'll never know in the first quarter because the teams always feel each other out.
Exactly.
The first 10 plays are scripted and all that good junk.
If you guys really want more insight on how to bet on that, tune in between 11 and 1 to the Charlie Polillo Show because Jerry Bowe and Josh Jordan, they've been doing an awesome job all week.
Charlie's back today.
Dang it. That's
What did Charlie ever do to you?
I tell you what. Here's what you can do. You can follow Josh on Twitter. I can't remember his Twitter handle, but you can also
Mr.
follow
Josh.
Jerry
like is, no, that's not his.
No, that's El Jefe.
Yeah, you can follow. You're right. My bad.
At Jerry.
I believe it is Jordan PFX.
Yes, at Jordan PFX on Twitter for Josh Jordan and at Jerry Bo Knows with a Z instead of an S on Twitter.
I was about to give El Jefe, he was about to get a bunch of mentions in this stuff. About that. What happened? What did I do?
But you can
That's what you get for being a Spurs fan.
You can also look up Jerry Bowe's Bookie Busters on houston.sportsmap.com. He puts out a ton of content every week on SportsMap, and he does a lot of stuff on Twitter as well. Speaking of sports map, Cody Stooge just got his article up ranking the Texans playoff scenarios. We were just talking about that earlier, so you can check that out. Jerry Bowe has his Bookie Busters up right now. And we also have the post-Christmas NBA guy from Paul Muth up on sports map just now. I guess Fred just put all those articles up, so you guys can check that out. We'll be right back and coming into that last segment after the break on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Jermaine Avery, Craig Koshkin, Andrew Carlson. This is our last segment, guys, of the week. Going into the new year. Are you guys just about as sick when you see all the quote-unquote new year, new me, all that type of stuff on social media?
I mean, why is New Year's Day all of a sudden the day to change something in your life? Like, if you really are doing anything that bad in your life or you're not... you're not happy about something that's going on in your life. Why does it take January 1st to roll around for you to want to change it? Shouldn't you want to change it because you want better for yourself?
Thank you. That pretty much encompassed it myself. My thing is like, why do you have to wait for a certain holiday? Just like you said, just me personally, if I see something that I don't like and I want to change it, I start working on it immediately. It could be December 31st, it could be July 2nd, it could be, you know, February 25th, whatever it is.
And the reason why so many New Year's resolutions fail, and I don't know the percentage, but I guarantee you it's high, is because you're trying to change habits with wholesale changes, like on a dime. Like you've got to make little changes over the course of time.
Right.
To really make that wholesale change you're looking for.
Specifically, let's talk about like the eating, dieting, exercise thing.
Yep.
If you want to actually do that, one of the worst times to do it is say, okay, New Year's resolution, I'm going to do this. Because number one, you've got Thanksgiving, you got Christmas, you got New Year's. Two big eating holidays and a big party holiday at the end of the year. If you can't be disciplined enough throughout those holiday times to start on that dieting or eating plan, exercise regime,
yep.
What makes you think that January 1st is all of a sudden magically is going to change right now? It's not going to happen.
No, I completely agree with that. And again, it's also a horrible time to start doing that, especially if you're going to add working out to that routine. Because you're going to make excuses every time you go to the gym and you see all the other people in there. Ah, it's too packed. I'm not ready. I can't do this.
Exactly. Now. Because gyms are loving this time of year.
They live off New Year's.
Everybody and their mama and then some signs up for a gym membership. You don't go. You keep paying them. They're making free money off of you. If you're going to go, use it. I mean, me, myself, like I got a treadmill and elliptical at home in the garage. If we don't sell them or get rid of them, I told my wife, I'm plugging it up. I'm using it. We have a rec center, literally two blocks up the street that we pay dues for our homeowners association. I'm going to take advantage of it. It's open literally from like 4 a.m. to 11 p.m. So I have no reason to not take advantage of it.
You got to use it. If you're already paying for it anyway, out of your HOA dues. Yeah. But I don't even do New Year's resolutions really. My wife and I came up with kind of a joke one last night. I'm not going to get into that, but it's just like, what's the point? Like if there's something you want to make a wholesale change on, do it at any point, the time you realize there's a problem that exists. If you don't do it, then all you do is make excuses for why you can't do it.
Exactly. I don't understand why people why do you need to feel the need to post it on social media, like to announce to the world, I'm going to change everybody. Because I'm going to be new this year. Look at me.
For the same reason Instagram is stock full of Christmas pajama photos.
People, dear God, that so gets on my nerves.
My biggest issue with social media, and I'm as guilty of it as the next person, is the look at me, I'm doing something, this is all about me mentality that goes. Like, if I'm going to the movies and I was like, hey, date night with the wife, hashtag whatever, who cares?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, for my birthday, a bunch of people sent me messages and stuff like that. Hey, dude, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday. And I was like, oh, okay, great.
I don't even do Facebook messages. Like, if you're important to me and I know it's your birthday, I send you a text or I call you.
Exactly. Those are the ones that really mean a lot. Now, the people who Facebook message me to tell me happy birthday, they may not have my phone number.
If I haven't seen you in a decade in person, yeah. I went to high school with you and I said, sure, thank you. I appreciate you getting that notification and saying, oh, I remember him. He was a nice guy. Or even if he was a complete ass, I'll say happy birthday to him.
Right. I mean, it's stuff like that that I don't mind all as much. But if it was like one of my cousins and they sent me a message and they like forgot my number or something like that, like, bro, you got my number. What are you doing? Like, seriously.
Or there's a family member you can call and get my number if you really did lose it.
Exactly.
That's lazy. But I have a good buddy who anytime it's someone's birthday that he's ever been close with at any point in time in his life, he always calls that person and spends 10 minutes or so talking with them on their birthday. Because to him, he may not talk to that person again over the course of the year.
Wow.
Like, there's just a chance of that because they've fallen out of touch or, yeah, you know, life gets in the way or whatever it is. So he makes sure on their birthday to spend some time talking to them. And I think that is a brilliant mentality to take into this kind of selfish social media world that we live in.
You know, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I like that. Because you're taking time out to actually pick up the phone, call, and talk to somebody. So when people actually physically phone call me that I don't normally hear from on a regular basis, I appreciate that. I can really appreciate that. A text or something like that every now and then, you know, whatever. That's cool too. But please stop with the new year, new me. Just change. And then post pictures of the change.
You know what? Be like, hey, it really was a new year, new me in April. Show us.
Yeah. Show me the change. March, April or something like that. I got a good buddy of mine. He moved out to Hawaii and he started to eat different and work out before he moved. And he moved, kept eating right, kept working out, dropped 30 pounds, gained lean muscle. But he decided to post the picture now instead of, like, you know, new year, new me type of thing. And I can appreciate that because he knows, like, what hard work and dedication is like. And so he's not the type of guy that's going to always brag about it or something like that. But he just decided to post it, like, now. And this is something that he's been working on. So it's not like he's like, new year, new me, look at me. Hey. It's something that he's been doing, something he's been dedicating his life to. So that's cool. If you have goals or dreams or something like that, or you want to change things, you want to change your position in life, just go out there and do it. There's no reason to announce it to the world. You know, announce it after you've done that change or after you've begun that journey. Or if you need help along the way with that journey, post something about that. Don't tell the world, oh, I want to go out here and I want to do something different with myself. I want to better myself. I want to do this. I want to do that. Say that, hey, I need help with this. Yeah. Is there anybody out there that can help me with this goal? Or I have this dream. I want to start this business. Or, you know, does anybody have
are there any business owners that can give me pointers on how to get capital?
Exactly. Exactly.
You're right. Like, the whole New Year's, new year, new me, look at me, this is my resolution, I'm going to keep it when you're probably not going to keep it, is silly and not something that, you know, I'm completely down with. Real quick before we kind of conclude here, it is the end of the year. Does anyone have, like, a top moment from 2018 from the sports world? I mean, like any, to me, I'll give you a second. For me, like, the top moment to me has to be the history that was made in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, without a doubt.
We've never seen a 16 seed beat a 1. University of Maryland, Baltimore County trounces Virginia.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that. There were some other moments that I can't think of off the top of my head, but overall, just generally speaking, 2018 was a pretty damn good year in sports.
It was a pretty damn good year in sports, certainly debatable in other aspects.
Oh, my God. In other aspects of life, 2018 can kiss my ass.
I don't blame you one bit
at period, all. Period, point blank, end of discussion. Screw you, 2018. Come on, 2019. What you got?
I am ready for the new year, although I did start a new job, which I do really like.
Yeah, and I've been doing more for Sports Map, so I've been really enjoying that. Well, we've also really enjoyed hanging out with you guys. Thank you for participating. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Craig. Thank you to myself. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1. Something wrong. I hold my head. MJ gone. I'm dead. I slapped my girl. She called her feds. I did that time and spent that bread. I'm headed home. I'm almost there. I'm on my way. Headed up the stairs.
ESPN 97.5.